Hey, everybody, this is Brian Dodd with the Pursuit of Service podcast, and we got a special edition this time. Jeff Wright, our regular co-host, will not be with us, but I get the privilege of talking with a longtime friend of mine, somebody y'all are all probably very familiar with, Jeff Henderson. And Jeff's got a distinguished career, marketing executive at Chick-fil-A, incredible campus pastor for North Point Ministries at two different locations. Really kind of modeled how churches can partner with their communities and serve their communities. And just through that partnership, help local businesses get their message out. And Jeff was so effective in that, that God has now moved him into doing that full time. And so what we want to do today is we just want to learn from Jeff, number one, how great leaders think and how they communicate. But number one, how great leaders help other great leaders get their message out. So you're going to want to take notes, sit back, and get ready to learn from just really, truly one of God's choicest servants and one of the greatest leaders you'll ever hear from, Jeff Henderson.
Well, Brian, thank you, man. That's quite the introduction, and it's good to see you. It's always good being with you. I was fortunate to be able to be with you and Jeff recently at a business breakfast. So, man, thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for your longtime friendship.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You know, it is. It has been, believe it or not, you and I have been interacting through various means now for 15 years, if you can believe it.
Crazy. And we're not getting any older. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, you and I still look exactly the same as we are.
That's right. That's right.
I know we have more energy than we did 15 years ago. So that's good news. So, all right. So first time I ever heard you talk about it was at an Orange conference. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the concept of four. And back then it was #4. And so what I'd really like to do is for people who may not be familiar with that or who have not bought your incredible book on the topic, which we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Jeff, just kind of walk us through what experiences led you to the four concept and how you really started using that, particularly at Gwinnett Church, to really impact your community and change lives. Mm-hmm.
So I spent a number of years, as you know, Brian, in marketing, and I'm a preacher's kid. So one of the lessons my dad taught me is that, you know, God's going to direct you in different seasons of life, and you might not know why I'm here, where I am, but many years from now, you're going to look back and go, oh, that's why he did that. So I spent a number of years in marketing, obviously worked at an incredible place with Chick-fil-A and learned so much. So when I became a campus lead pastor and really a church starter, I really asked, I think you could call it a marketing question, but I think it's really a vision question. What do you want to be known for? What do we want to be known for? Mm-hmm. And in that initial meeting at Gwinnett Church, we were just in the early days, we were not even meeting. It was just those early startup days. Somebody in the meeting said, well, many people are more familiar with what the church is against. What do we, you know, rather than what the church wants to be known for? And that just really struck all of us. And so we said, what do we want to be known for? And, you know, obviously there's the spirituals part of that, but then there's like, we want to be for the community. We want to be for Gwinnett and for Gwinnett businesses and for Gwinnett students and for Gwinnett businesses and adults and kids and students. And so I mentioned the early days to our staff that if we decide 10 years from now to close the church down, I would want the community to rise up and protest and say, no, 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 you can't close down, because if you do, we will all suffer. That there's a biblical truth there, being a city on a hill. Yeah. And being a light. So that's where #4Gwinnett came about. And we launched that. And about 2 years in, I started getting coffee mugs in the mail from other churches and t-shirts. I got all kinds of t-shirts from 4Guatemala to 4Pittsburgh to 4Dubai. And that's when the Lord really began opening up. Oh, this is something that he wants me to pursue. So that's where four became from, but it's not just for churches. It's also for businesses. What do you want to be known for? And then the second question is, what are you known for? And there's a gap in any organization with those two questions. But when those two questions, when the answers to those two questions match, when what you want to be known for is what you're known for, you create what I call vision carriers, people that tell their friends about your church, about your restaurant, about your business, because they've experienced your unique vision and they tell other people about you. So that's kind of the genesis of Four and what I've been doing the last several years.
Yeah. Well, I got to, and I want to ask you to forgive me on something, because I like to think of myself as curious and a continual learner. So when I hear something, I like to ask follow-up questions.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned people become vision carriers. Okay. How does somebody become, how do you create vision carriers? I think everybody, regardless of if you're in profit or nonprofit, they want people to multiply their message. They want vision carriers. How do you create vision carriers?
Well, I think not everybody's going to resonate with your vision or what you want to do. So it's not for everybody, but you do want a problem or an opportunity to be communicated in such a way that people would say, oh, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Such as, hey, many people are more familiar with what the church is against rather than what the church is for. Oh, I want to resonate. Or, you know, when I was at North Point, we want to create a church that unchurched people love to attend. And so, or when I was at Buckhead Church, it was, you know, there's 300,000 people within our church, 7,000 come here, which means 293,000 don't go anywhere. Yeah. Well, that's a problem. Let's reach. So I think you want to create a compelling vision and a problem. Do you want to help us solve this? Mm-hmm. And if you do, then here's how we're going to do that. So sometimes vision can just be rhetoric. If you don't have any plan or any strategy, it just becomes rhetoric. However, if you've got a compelling problem, a compelling vision, then you've got to be able to give, and this is where a lot of organizations miss it. You have to give the vision carriers, the staff, the team, the volunteers, language that they can communicate it seven people down the line. And if it's a 15 paragraph mission statement, they're not going to be able to do that. So that's why Four Gwinnett, two words. And so for me, vision's like a bucket of water. The more words that are in the bucket, the more the words are going to fall out. So get people that are resonating with your vision, what you want to do, and then how can they communicate it if they were to say, why should we go to that restaurant? What is it that your church does? When we gave out Four Gwinnett t-shirts, when people said, hey, what does Four Gwinnett mean? I needed them to be able to clearly articulate what Four Gwinnett was all about. And when they did, they became vision carriers. Another way to think of vision carrying is positive word of mouth advertising.
Yeah.
When someone says, you've got to go see this movie, you've got to go to this restaurant, oh, you need to go to this doctor, that's a vision carrier. They're telling their friends about your business or organization. And that's the most powerful form of advertising there is.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk to you about communication in a little bit, because you and I originally got connected through an organization called Preaching Rocket, where you were helping pastors with their messaging. So we'll get to that in a little bit, because I definitely want to ask you about communication. And Jeff, from the outside looking in, of course, you're an entrepreneur now. Once again, from the outside looking in, you were set up nicely as a campus pastor for North Point. And I work with churches for a living, so I'm going to go ahead and really compliment you on something. You were probably the most well-known and from the outside looking in, most successful campus pastor in America. But there was something stirring in your heart that you wanted to step out of that and become an entrepreneur. You wrote about that in a book, so I won't go down that path, but you're now an entrepreneur. You've lost, I don't want to say lost, but by the way, correct my question, but you've stepped out of the comfort of being in that North Point environment. Tell me what that's been like for you. Tell me what it's like stepping out of that and becoming an entrepreneur. Walk us all through that process, because on a certain level, you took quite a risk to do what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Well, our mutual friend, John Maxwell, says when you step out, you usually take a step back. And you know, if you're kind of starting all over. For example, when you and I met, I was the lead pastor of Buckhead Church. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, 7,000 people. So I left there to help start Gwinnett Church. That was a step back. I went from 7,000 to zero, starting all over. And I had several people go, why are you starting all over? But part of this is something I would not necessarily recommend for everyone. I had to discover this about myself, but I'm a starter. If you're not a starter, you're probably not going to do this. But for me, I usually get the itch to do something different every 4, 5, 6 years because I'm a starter. I'm not a maintainer. And there's nothing wrong with maintaining and there's nothing wrong with starting. It's just you got to know which one you are. And so you've got to be comfortable taking a step back. You got to be comfortable going from, in this, to continue this example, 7,000 to zero, or leaving a platform of like North Point to start all over. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about the platform. It's not about the numbers. It's about where God, where do you want me to go next? And if I've reached kind of my, you know, this is as far as I can go from a growth standpoint. One of the things I tell people is if there's no room to grow, it's time to go. Because I'm going to stand before the Lord someday and I can't say, well, I couldn't leave because, you know, I needed to have insurance. I mean, that's you need to have insurance and that's wise. But from an eternity perspective, that's not a good answer. So there's always risk. There's risk in leaving, but there sometimes the biggest risk isn't leaving. Sometimes the biggest risk is staying and we can get lulled to sleep and get complacent. And so the question I'm constantly asking is, am I in a position to grow? And what I've discovered is opportunities flow to those who grow. And again, this isn't a plea to necessarily leave your church, your business, your organization, because there's plenty of friends of mine who have stayed in the same organization for a number of years, and yet they are continuing to grow and they're continuing to get opportunities. So for me, and then, you know, Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, taught me, you know, leverage unexpected opportunities. So when I started getting t-shirts in the mail that said for Guatemala and for Pittsburgh, I thought, huh, I think there's a way for me to serve churches. And then I launched this idea called a business breakfast to get the message out. But there were so many business leaders there that they were coming up saying, hey, could you come speak to my organization about this? And I thought, oh, there's another opportunity. So you have to be cognizant of these opportunities and leverage them. So, but yeah, it's always a step back. I mean, I went from, you know, serving a staff of 60 people to going to a coffee shop all by myself, starting all over. And it was hard and it was lonely at times. But when you know this is what you're supposed to do, and when you and your spouse know this, we signed up for this, that just helps you move through the inevitable ups and downs and of, you know, of starting something new.
Yeah. I've always admired guys like you because I am not a risk taker at all. You know, I like to tell people I've had the same haircut I've had since 1978. You know, I drive 5 miles over the speed limit, not six, five, you know, and yeah, I've spent my whole life and I've loved doing it and God's blessed me. I've spent my whole life making other people successful, you know. Yeah. And God has richly blessed me for doing that. But I've always admired guys like you who are willing to go out there. So you talked about being a starter. I think the four concept resonates with everybody. And you've captured it in language and you're messaging it in an incredible way. But it definitely resonates, as you talked about, all over the world. So let's say, and I'm going to use an example that you and I were just involved in. You came to a breakfast that I was at. It was for the Ackworth and Kennesaw, Georgia Business Associations.
Right.
So we had, I guess, give or take 200 people in that room to hear you. So let's say one of those organizations does what you say. They call you, they say, help us be for our community and help us get our message out and partner with our community. Let's say it's a realty company, just a realty company. What are some practical first steps that any organization can do to start showing they are for their community and start impacting their community?
Mm-hmm. The first thing you need to think through is do a vision inventory. Does everybody know what you want to be known for? And when leaders assume that, there's a warning light on the dashboard. Don't assume. And a vision inventory can be just walking around, or you can do this virtually. Hey, what do you think we want to be known for? And just listen. And if you get the same answer and it's compelling and they're fired up about it, great. If they look at it and go, oh gosh, what do we want to be known for? Then there's a problem there. But in any organization, there's a gap between what you want to be known for and what you are known for. So what you have to do at that point is you got to be for four groups of people. You got to be for the customer, for the team, for the community, and for you as a leader. So there's the four that you have to be for. Now, of the third one, for the community, so often organizations just talk about themselves. Hey, come to this. We launched this new product. We have a new sermon series on Sunday. And all that's fine. We need to tell people what we're doing. But too often, I put in the book, many times, if a business was a person, many businesses would be considered narcissists. Because if you look at their Instagram page, it's all about what's happening at the church. And they never talk about the community. And the hero should not be the organization. The hero should be the people that you're trying to serve. So the first place to begin is to go, who are we serving in the community? And if our business shut down, who would be sad about that in the community? And for us at Gwinnett Church, we wanted to use our social media, not just to talk about us, but to talk about businesses and schools and to promote. We kind of wanted to be the convention and visitors bureau of our county and highlight all these businesses. And so for us, we wanted to just be such a value add to our community because we wanted to make the community an even better place to live. But that means you've got to get out in the community. And that means you got to know people in the community. And that means you've got to understand what are the problems facing the community. Because if not, the church and a business just can become insular and insider focused. I call it insideritis, mm-hmm. where all the issues are just about how can we perpetuate the business or how do we keep the church going versus adding value to the community. And I think from a biblical standpoint, to be a bright light, you've got to be out there. So having an awareness of what's happening in the community. And so for example, in Gwinnett, one of the things that was significant about that is that in Georgia, of the 10 largest high schools in the state of Georgia, 8 were in Gwinnett County. Well, that right there gave us a direction that we've got to be focused on high schools. And we wanted to leverage our social media to promote high schools. In particular, sports are really big in Gwinnett County. So we highlighted, you know, football teams in the county that were doing really well, baseball teams. We just talked about sports. And we got a lot of feedback from people going, wow, we love this. Why are you doing this? Because we were for Gwinnett. And we have 8 of the 10 largest high schools in Georgia. It's one of the ways we show that we're for you. So all of that, a whole strategy on that. But I think the main thing is to be clear. Do you know your community? And it doesn't have to be a large community. It could be just, you know, that block or two. But how can you add value and be for them?
Yeah, the strategies in the book, I would watch Gwinnett's, and, you know, you don't have to outthink the room, so to speak. I mean, like I would see when your staff would go to lunch at a local restaurant, if you got good service, you do an Instagram photo of your server, talk about how good he or she did and recommend the restaurant and then hashtag for Gwinnett.
Right.
So just. There's a strategy behind it, but there is some practicality to it as well. So,
sure. Yeah. And we kind of had a principle that if every third post, and again, this isn't necessarily social media, but this is closer to social media, but I think it helps to illustrate this. Mm-hmm. Every third post needs to be about the community. Now, you know, if we got 7 straight posts and it's all about the church, something's wrong there. Yep. And if you go to a lot of Instagram pages right now, of a lot of churches in particular, it's all about what's happening at church, which is fine, which makes sense. But at some point that begins a little bit too insider focused.
Yeah. And it becomes white noise. All right. So let's circle back to communication. So this is when you and I really got to know each other. you do a lot of, I don't know if you still do it or not, you used to do a lot of personal coaching on communication. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody I worked with hired you to help prepare them. It was an elder at our church, and he was going to be delivering a message as chairman of the elders, and he hired you to help him with his message as an example. But and I'm just going to pick one thing because communication is so layered and so complex. But at that same breakfast I referenced earlier, I noticed you do a lot of, I guess we'll call them memorable statements or bottom line statements. And I noticed a lot of them rhymed. Okay. Number one, is that by design? And number two, how did you come up with that process? And walk us through your communication strategy a little bit when you do public addresses.
It is by design. Now, not every memorable phrase needs to rhyme, but I mean, I think we all know Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492 because it rhymes. Nobody knows when Magellan circumnavigated the globe because it doesn't rhyme. Right. So there's just that, and here's why you want it to, you know, the goal of any communicator is 5 days later, when somebody comes up and says, "Hey, what'd you do on Tuesday?" "I went to hear Brian Dodd speak." "Oh, cool. What did Brian Dodd say?" Whatever they say next is really important. And the goal, many times, especially when I coach business communicators, they're like, "Oh gosh, I got to speak for 45 minutes. I don't know how I'm going to fill the time." I'm like, "All right, time out." The goal is not to fill the time. The goal is to leverage the time. And actually, if you could go 20 minutes instead of 45 minutes, you'll do everybody a favor. So, but at the same time, I want to make it really, really clear about two questions. What do I want you to do with this? And not every talk needs to have a "what do you do" action item, but then there needs to be a reason why. And then what is my single most persuasive idea? It's interesting to me that of all the inauguration addresses that the United States of America has had, there's usually only one that's remembered.
Right.
And it's because of a catchphrase. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Now, that one didn't rhyme, but what President Kennedy's speechwriter did is he did what we call trading places. He flipped the country in you, and that's what made it memorable. And maybe I'm wrong, but maybe there's another one out there that we remember, but it's really that catchphrase that really made the talk lift. I have a dream. Four words. Now Dr. King, you know, expanded on that. So for me, catchphrases help people remember, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, now I think the expert in this is Andy Stanley. Somebody gave Andy a picture frame one time of all the bottom lines and catchphrases that they could remember. And this huge picture frame. Well, as a communicator, that's gold, you know. Right. But and they didn't go Google it. This is just from their notes or from things they remembered. So what do you want people to do? Because your goal as a communicator is not, okay, I got through 45 minutes. No one's there. Please keep me, you know, keep talking for 45 minutes. And at the end of the time, I go, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with this. But it really comes back with it's very similar to what we just talked about with vision. What's the problem or tension that this talk is going to help solve? Like in the first 3 to 5 minutes, I want people to think, oh, I'm so glad I came to this. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Oh, that's interesting. I because when a communicator assumes that everyone is going to pay attention, that's terrible. That's why many teachers are good teachers, but they're not good communicators because they're just teaching through content and they're assuming, well, it's a class. You paid money for this. So I got content. So sit down. I'm going to talk for an hour. And I think a lot of teachers miss out on opportunities because they haven't really packaged the content in a way for it to be memorized, but it's not as much about the memory. The memory helps it stick around so that 5 days later, you're able to go, oh, this is what Brian said, and this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And the goal of a communicator, I think, is to add value to the lives of people that are listening. And so you got to be very value focused to go, okay, what am I going to ask them to do that's going to help them or their organization?
Have you ever heard of Parkinson's Law?
I have not.
Okay. All right. Parkinson's Law says this. It was developed in 1955. And it basically says, if you give somebody a year to get a job done, they'll take a year to do it.
Yeah.
If you give them a day, they'll get it done in a day. And so Parkinson's Law is a law about procrastination. So when you give somebody 45 minutes to speak, they feel the need to take up 45 minutes. It's Parkinson's Law.
Mm-hmm.
They could actually get it done in 20 and probably do a better job. So,
sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I want to close out on a couple of personal things. First is a question really I'm interested in as a dad. And the last one will be a fun one, which you get to really honor somebody. But one thing, you know, Jeff, you're a preacher's kid. And
right.
I'm sure there's a legacy even beyond your dad and your mom. But you grew up loving the Lord. You still love the Lord, have a great relationship with Jesus. You were a pastor. And now your children have a great relationship with Jesus. And they love the Lord and they love the church. So we've got generation after generation after generation with just a great spiritual heritage. Very broad question, but I mean, you can zero in where you want to. How did your family do that? What were some things you did that instilled that love of Christ for generation after generation?
So as a preacher's kid, you're able to see your parents, and particularly in my case, my dad, behind a pulpit, but then I also got to see him at home at 5 o'clock. And there wasn't a discrepancy between those two. I'm not saying my dad was perfect. There's only been one perfect person on the planet, but
yeah,
but he was consistent. And he also never chose the church over our family because he knew someone will be the pastor of this church after me, but no one can be Jeff's dad. And so his values were in line. Anytime a pastor thinks I gotta do this for God because God needs me, that's a dangerous place to be. God doesn't need any of us. He likes to go to work with his kids. There's a stewardship responsibility. My dad worked really, really hard. I'm not saying that he was, you know, taking off at 2 o'clock every day, but he was the same person behind the pulpit as he was at home. And one of the best gifts he gave our family was how great his marriage was to my mom. So just seeing that consistency, you're like, huh, I think he actually believes this stuff. And it's actually had a difference in his life. And so for us, and Wendy's dad was not a pastor, but very successful business person. So, but he was the same way. So very consistent, and that consistency and that integrity of being true. Again, nobody's perfect, but integrity doesn't mean you're a perfect person. Integrity means at the end of the day, you've stayed in line with your values at a long trajectory, in my opinion. And so just seeing that was so intriguing to me that I thought, I think maybe all this stuff my dad is preaching about is true. And that was a good role model for me. Now, I worked most of my career, I've worked either at Chick-fil-A or North Point. Well, those two organizations have been really clear about valuing your family and valuing your relationships and your marriage. And so I've been very fortunate and very blessed to work at two organizations who have not said, hey, this organization's got to be at the center of your life. But at the same time, it by allowing me and others to focus on the things that will stand the test of time, it has allowed us to be better leaders. And so just seeing that consistency and integrity from my dad was really a role model for me to follow. And to go, I'm going to try to be at every volleyball match. I'm going to try to be at every soccer game that I can. I'm going to be home. I'm going to be consistent. There'll be some seasons where it's busy. But at the end of the day, it's true. Somebody else is the lead pastor at the three churches I've helped start in Atlanta. But my relationship with Wendy, Jesse, and Cole are as strong as ever. So that to me really is the goal. And when you And again, part of your challenge is, and this happens in some ways, you can't help but it happens, but your identity is going to get wrapped up in what you do. And when you pull that away, there's a lot of tendons that are pulled from your soul and it hurts. So be careful that not to let that role get too wrapped up around your identity. That's why I think some leaders, Brian, I mean, you're the leadership expert, but I think it's one of the subconscious reasons why leaders hold on too long. They begin to start to sense that, well, if I'm not doing any of this, doing this anymore, who am I going to be? And what am I going to say when people ask me, what do I do? And so when they realize that, they, I think, hold on too long.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of your family, final question I got for you. Anybody that follows you on social media, and I had the privilege of going to your book release party for Four.
Well, thanks for going to that.
Oh, it was an honor and a pleasure to be there. You brought your mom on stage at the end, and your mom shows up in your social media feed. My favorite post on social media last year was her and Trey Young when you were there for that.
Right.
You know, you talked about your dad. Let's close out. What leadership lessons have you learned from your mom?
My mom is 95 years young. She stays young at heart. And the fact that she knows who Trae Young is with the Atlanta Hawks at 95 says that she's staying on top of things. And she'll be watching the Braves tonight and college football and pro football. And she likes to stay young. And so I think the fact that she knows who Trae Young is and can tell you how the Hawks are going to do this year, there's just, she's got an interest in something. I'm not saying that you have to be passionate about sports, but she just is, and she's not, you know, she's not saying, well, I'm 95 years old, I guess I just have to sit and, you know, not do anything. She, this keeps her young.
Yeah.
And so I think that I want to make sure that my brain is still staying young at heart and involved in something and still relevant. And she chose something and stayed with it and focused. And so she's a huge sports fan. And when she went down there, the whole Hawks organization just fell in love with her, and she really loves people. And she, and she's got a, there's a joy about her that is attractive. And I think that's the Jesus in her, but I think staying young at heart, was a big help.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation, as I knew it would be. Not a big surprise there, but you know, here's what I would tell anybody listening. You always want to be growing, always want to be learning, always want to remain curious, always want to know how to impact more people, and you want to die with something in your inbox and something left to check off that you haven't got done yet. And one of the best ways you can do that is start being for other people. So here's what I would recommend as we close out. All the links are going to be in the show notes in terms of Jeff's products and things of that nature. But Jeff, if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to potentially have you come to their organization or come to their community, how do they get in touch with you?
Sure. They can just go to jeffhenderson.com, Brian. But I would encourage them to get, know what you're for or what to do next. My cell phone number is in both books. So once you're done with that, just text me and we can go from there.
Yeah. And I can't, here's the thing I'll tell you about Jeff, and I have known Jeff for quite a while. Arguably one of the smartest human beings I've ever met, one of the most gifted communicators I've ever met, but as wonderful as his leadership acumen is and his skills are, he's a better person. And you would be better as a leader to either have Jeff personally or Jeff's resources in your orbit and part of your personal growth and leadership development. So Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And we hope to talk to you again in the future. And thank you for all you do to serve leaders.
Thanks, Brian. Good to see you, buddy.